Good afternoon. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Hooten, Judge Sleater, Judge Klaphockey, the Honorable Carol Hooten presiding.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals in this virtual presentation session. And we are hearing today the oral arguments in the case on the matter of the welfare of the children of SS. The file number is A201326. Counsel, you each have 15 minutes for your oral argument. The appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. I do ask that you introduce yourself prior to proceeding with your oral argument, and also that you be mindful of the fact that this is recorded and will be made public. And so to the extent you refer to the child, you just refer to the child, not by name, but just refer to the child that are and the parents with their initials, our mother, our father. And that way we will maintain the confidentiality regarding the identity of these parties. With that being said, the appellant may proceed at this time. You are muted. Thank you.
Should be better.
That's much better. Thank you. I'm sure whatever you said was brilliant. So
I'll try again. May it please the court. I'm Lena Votny. I represent the appellant in this matter. The proper standard of review, I don't think there's a disagreement on that, but that standard is whether the district court's findings are supported by substantial evidence and not clearly erroneous. So a proper inquiry would examine sufficiency of the evidence and to determine whether there's clear and convincing evidence for the termination in the matter. The factual findings are examined for clear error, being those that are contrary to the evidence, the weight of the evidence, or completely not supported. In this case, just short summary, the court did find three bases for termination, as well as a determination that it's in the best interest of the children to terminate. I don't think there's a disagreement that in order for TPR to be ordered, that at least one statutory basis has to be determined, as well as best interests of the children.
And it's my understanding there were four grounds brought, but the judge only found on three of the grounds. Am I correct on that?
Correct. Correct. The fourth ground, which would have been a financial, not providing financially, was not found.
So are you proceeding today on the basis that the findings of the court were clearly erroneous?
Correct. Or not, yep, and not supported by the substantial evidence. So right. So
is
here-
Is there any particular finding that you're contesting?
Yes, so in each of the, under each of the statutory grounds, in the district court, I believe at least mentions that it must do this. That it must examine what the conditions are at the time of the hearing. And then as well, with that information, then determine if the conditions that led to the filing of this petition would continue in the foreseeable future. Or if, I suppose in a, I don't wanna call this not typical, but in a case maybe where social services is involved, basically, when we get to TPR stage, we look and see where have we come and what's it going to look like going into the future. Here, being that it's a privately filed TPR, we don't have any of that history. So we're looking at conditions at the time. Are those conditions such that the parent that the allegations are against, that they're going to
We also have the previous orders from the trial court as to how to handle this matter, whether, you know, even though it wasn't a neglect or something brought by the county, we have those items to look at, do we not?
We do. And so we do have some orders. We all have the record. I'm just going to use round numbers. So say 2013 and 14, 2013 and 14, there were OFP orders, orders for protection, and then there was the order that modified custody. So we do have that background by way of at least—
And some of these orders provided for how he could exercise his parental visitation.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And so to be clear, those orders provide in a general way that the appellant did have, at least during periods of time, we'll go with from the custody order really to the current, that the appellant did have the ability to prove sobriety and he could move back into a more active parental role by modifying the order, but also that he was afforded the ability to have limited supervised visits during up until current, he had the ability for some supervised visitations on a limited, you know, 1 hour at a time, short-term basis. So looking at, you know, bringing that forward to the trial, the evidence presented there was really that the appellant in the course of several years in the past essentially did not exercise any parenting, the rights to the supervised parenting, and also that he didn't or wasn't able to, whichever way it should be said, prove sobriety. Really, that was the crux of it.
Well, there also was the question of what kind of contact did he have with the children since 2012, right? 8 years of no contact, right?
Close to that. I believe it was 2013 was, the last contact in the record. But so during that 2013 and 14 time period, there were orders for protection that, in essence, ordered the appellant not to have contact.
Was it allowed on a supervised kind of basis?
I don't believe the order for protection allowed the supervised basis, but the custody order. I'd have to review the order.
Did any of those orders disallow him from having contact in terms of letters or any other kind of communication?
I do not believe so. And so it's a given in the record that during, say, at least 2015 to 2019, there was very little, if any, contact by the appellant. His testimony is that this was a sobriety issue. He was not in a position that he should be having contact. And so he had testified that really until he got into a sober state, his view, at least, of what he was supposed to do was to pull himself back and not have contact under those orders until he got sober.
In terms of abandonment, does it why he abandoned, i.e. does it matter that he was having trouble with chemicals, or do we focus on what in fact his relationship was with the children?
Well, I believe on that question for abandonment, part of the elements require some intent, I guess, on the part of the parent. Intent, I think, is viewed several ways.
Are you saying there's some evidence that he intended to have contact with the children but didn't?
No, I believe there wasn't. The record would support that he didn't intend to abandon. His understanding was he was following the court orders. So it's not that he intended to forego the parental, you know, relationship, but that these court orders in his mind state, until you prove to the court and social services that you're sober, you're essentially very limited.
Well, the trial court found differently. The trial court found that he had intentionally forsaken his children. Right?
I believe that the court found that.
That's the trial court's finding. The trial court looks at the entire record and the inferences that can be drawn from certain other evidence to come to a finding on that item. You're saying that that's not supported in that fashion?
Yes, I am. So on two parts, I would say. First, I think to make that finding, there should be some additional references to the record that support an intent on the part of the appellant to do that. But also, back to my point of the court not determining what is the current situation. So the current situation in the record is that at the beginning of this case, and there may be some date overlap, but the appellant had become sober and started paying child support and was going to initiate some form of contact. We pretty much have at that moment the filing of this case.
Has he initiated any kind of contact until the date of the hearing?
Prior to the hearing. So prior to the hearing on the case, I believe the record indicates he attempted to contact the respondent mother, but it all fairly closely lines up to sobriety. He's sober, and shortly right there, then we get this filing. So we call it an unfortunate timing of events, but it all falls within a short period of time that he starts the initiation, he's getting to that point, and then we go into a TPR case.
Mr. Novotny, I want to follow up Judge Klapacki's questions. I'm looking also at the court's findings. Right now I'm looking at finding 16, where the court found that Mr. Jacobson had not seen or spoken to the children in any meaningful way. It goes on, the judge finds has had no contact with Ms. Truck, that'd be the mother, during the time, even though the OFPs and temporary family order did not prohibit contact. He made no contact with mother to check on the children, never texted or emailed. He did receive, the court found in finding 17, information about the children from his mother. However, there is no evidence that he asked Ms. Larson or another third person party to arrange supervised visitation. Mm-hmm. Getting to your main argument, if I understand correctly, what would be clearly erroneous, for instance, about any of those findings which seem to support one or more of the statutory factors?
So those are findings. It goes back to our position that the judge's findings didn't come to the current. The findings are looking at these things that occurred in the past. We get to the filing of this case. My client, the appellant, is at the point to initiate or reinitiate, right? He's at a sober state. And then we get the filing of this case, which frustrates that. We now have a TPR case to deal with. And then for whatever reason, the TPR trial, I believe it was a year. I don't know if it was pandemic related. I can't recall, but it's a year from the time really that it's filed, you know, and then we hit the pandemic times and they are what they are. We have a trial a year after filing. And in that year, there's nothing in the record that would change that, you know, there was contact or things that occurred at that time while the case is pending.
Can I refer you to, I want to follow up on Judge Sleater's questions, but in finding number 19, they talk about, there's a discussion by the court or findings by the court that he has been sober since August of 2019. But there's no indication that after he was sober, which I hear you saying that was his excuse for not seeing the kids, or the reason for not seeing the kids, that he did not have contact after that date. And are you claiming that's clearly erroneous?
No, I don't think anything in the record says otherwise. There is no evidence that there was contact that occurred necessarily while this matter was pending. The custody order had, until this matter resolved itself, there was no modification to the custody order. There wasn't supervised visitation. I think the parties, while this is going on, really the respondent and appellant didn't talk at all. There was no form of communication going to happen.
I know, but
there.
Wouldn't that also, I mean, I understand, you know, that, I mean, he testified at trial that he felt like he couldn't see him because of his lack of sobriety. And that he had to recover, and that took up a substantial period of time. But then after he reaches sobriety, he still hasn't made contact with the children, even though he clearly could have, correct?
Well, he did try to at the beginning of this case, and then this case is filed, and I don't believe, well, we only have the I don't believe it actually made the court order. I guess if we had a transcript of the first hearing. The first hearing in this case, the judge didn't allow a modification to allow him visitation. It was requested. So essentially we're sitting where in a TPR case where the judge says he can't have contact. I suppose he didn't allow it in the case. So, and then the case goes out for a period of time.
But wasn't he given a pathway of how he could get back to seeing the children, even in an unsupervised setting? I'm just looking at paragraph 16, which says he had joint legal custody, and he was awarded supervised visits and a path to unsupervised visits.
So I think the path to supervised visits there is the custody order said, do the following three things, talk to child social services, have your house inspected, right? Stuff from years ago. I think that's the path. And at least while the TPR case was pending, I think if I may finish my statement here, I see I'm out of time. There was testimony that at least from my client that he did try to take the steps where he contacted Fillmore County Social Services to have them do a home visit, which was one of the things that were required, and was told they can't do it because he now lives in Winona County, cross lines. And Winona County Social Services was contacted and they said, we don't have a case on you, so we can't do it.
Well, wasn't there a further issue? He didn't have a home he other than living with a sponsor.
Correct. He's a tenant. Landlord tenant with his sponsor. He'd be the tenant.
That was a sufficient home for the children as well?
Well, at least in the record, the landlord described a certain, you know, the layout indicated that he was as a landlord willing to allowing children to be in that environment, that there were separate rooms. And that would have been the only evidence presented is what he indicated was the conditions. The guardian ad litem didn't go to the residence, and I guess nobody else went to the residence to examine it either, to contradict that.
Okay, well, thank you. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. The respondent may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Alexandra Griffin, representing the respondents in this matter.
Ms. Griffin, which of the three bases that the trial court used for termination you think is the strongest?
If I had to choose one, I believe abandonment would be strongest. I think there's ample, substantial, clear and convincing evidence in the record by appellant's own testimony that he did not have contact with the children for 6 years in some places.
And by its own definition, abandonment isn't something you look at just one point in time. It occurs over an extended period of time. Is that right?
That's right.
What evidence do you point to shows the continuation of the abandonment even through the time of the hearing?
Yes, we have treaded through this timeline a little bit, and so I would like to make that clear. I believe the testimony of the appellant was that he entered treatment August of 2019, and that's when he initiates this path to sobriety. The affidavit of service on file in this case was filed, it shows that he was served November 22nd of 2019, that same year, which is consistent with what the appellant testified to. He said mid to late November. And then he also testified that he didn't get out of treatment then until December 2019. So at that point, he's out of treatment and sober, and this case is pending. But even in that moment, he is entitled to 1 hour a week of supervised visits. There is zero limitation on his ability to reach out, contact the school, contact, you know, the child's mother to try and attempt to facilitate whatever reintegration he's envisioning and what he testified to at trial.
He did not still have the right to, as a legal custodian?
He did. He continued to have legal custody, joint legal custody, throughout the entirety of these proceedings. And so he would have had some rights associated with that as far as keeping himself in the children's lives if he had intended to. And it's clear in the record, and I believe that the trial court makes it very clear in their order, that they relied on that evidence to show that he had not shown any intent to remain in these children's lives. And I do think that they appropriately address the instance, the circumstances at the time of trial, even though there was this year-long wait, which was just unfortunate timing due to the pandemic, that at the time of the trial, there is no parent-child relationship. So I think the court and everybody can commend that the appellant was taking steps to get back on his feet, but I think the court makes it pretty clear that maintaining sobriety and having a safe place to live is not necessarily the benchmark for, in the foreseeable future, being able to take on even the limited roles of parenthood that he had, which was the joint legal custody and some access to parenting time.
Ms. Griffin, how do you respond to, it seems like an overriding point in terms of findings that Mr. Novotny makes on behalf of his client, is the court didn't give proper credit to those items that would inhibit his ability to comply with any one of those statutory bases, the chemical dependency, the orders for protection, et cetera. What is your response to that as it relates to the court's findings?
I think this is thoroughly tread over in the record and in the findings. I do think the findings spend some time on the orders for protection that were issued in 2013 and 2014, but maybe didn't lend as much credence to what did or did not happen during that time period, because at this point we are 6 years removed from that. And so I think the evidence or the lack thereof was what happened in the intervening years and even after appellant enters treatment, that there's no contact. And that's one of the number one pieces of evidence that the court is relying on in this order. It's indisputable. No one is saying that there was any type of contact. And I believe the court is saying and relied on a fact that there would have had to have been some evidence of an attempt to exercise any type of reaching out or exercising those legal rights that he did have. And the court cites that repeatedly in the order, that there was simply no contact and there was no attempt at contact.
So what period of time are we talking about where there was no contact after he had finished sobriety?
It's my understanding that there is no contact even from the time of filing the petition, through the time of trial. And I understand that when there's a TPR action pending, that may cause a person to think twice before reaching out to the parties involved in that case. But it certainly would seem plausible that there were legal avenues and there were ways that during the pendency of the termination of parental rights proceeding, that appellant could have accessed the rights that he presently had at that time for the year that this was pending. And that didn't happen. We didn't see that happen.
No contacts with the school?
None in the record, no. There's no evidence of any type of contact to school, to mom, to children, or even to social services, which would have been a requirement for getting that.
Any birthday cards, any Christmas cards?
There's nothing in the record indicating anything of that kind, no.
Was there anything, any order that was in existence that precluded him from having contact from the time of his sobriety until the the hearing in 2020?
No. And any order that limited contact before, no order that had ever gone into effect involving these people had total prohibition of contact. There was always, always avenues for phone contact, for letters, for cards, for those types of demonstrations of affection.
No evidence that he tried to make a phone call and was and that somebody kept him from talking to the children?
There was not conclusive evidence on that during the trial. I do think that there was some back and forth during cross-examination of my client as to whether or not there was an attempted phone call. That would have happened, I believe, in the timeline is not clear. There were competing stories about that phone call, but I think the important fact of this was that affidavit of service indicates November 22nd, 2019, he's aware of these proceedings. And it's not clear to me that the insinuated contact happened before that date or after. We don't have any information in the record on that. And I would further add that even if there was an attempt and it was somehow thwarted, there are other avenues for accessing these things beyond doing it by agreement and just a phone call to one person. And I think the record is clear that appellant knew that and that the first step would probably be social services. And there was no evidence that that contact occurred to them either.
Or his mother.
Correct.
I gather his mother had continuing contact with the children, did she?
She did. And it gradually decreased as the children got older. I think it was a confusing time probably for everybody involved when you're determining family dynamics. That was the testimony, that the children were ultimately less inclined to see their grandmother as they got older.
How does the fact that he was paying child support at some point cut against the concept of intentional abandonment?
It's,
or doesn't it?
I don't know that it factors either way. I do think it's my understanding that was done by automatic income withholding. I don't know how much of an active effort it was for that to occur. And that particular issue at trial, that finding of financial support was ultimately not sustained by the court, as you noted earlier. Well, I think I don't want to belabor the point too much, but I think that we, as counsel explained, really only need one of these statutory findings to hold. I do think that there is substantial, clear, and convincing evidence for each of these three things. That said, if you were to find that neglect and palpable unfitness were not found, but that abandonment was found, that would be enough to make this district court order stand. And so I do think that each factor has been met by clear and convincing evidence. I believe the record is very clear. I believe that the court order that resulted from the trial is very clear as to which pieces of evidence were relied on for each of these findings. There were five witnesses that testified at that trial. The orders for protection came into evidence. The family court file order modifying parenting time came into evidence. And on the whole, all of these things were considered and the court found that the statutory requirement had been met.
Is there anything in the record supporting your statement that any financial contributions he was making was pursuant to, I assume it was through income withholding, or is that in the record?
I believe he testifies to the amount coming out of his paycheck, but I don't want to say that for sure. I don't know that for sure.
Okay. So you don't know if this was a county initiated withholding?
I don't know for sure.
Okay. All right.
It was my understanding that that was the case, which is why there had been periods of time when he was on payroll somewhere where this was happening, which is why the court didn't find that, make that finding that whenever he was working and able to pay, he was paying. I maybe incorrectly assumed that that was through automatic income withholding, and I want to apologize. I don't believe that's in the record for sure.
Okay, well, I'm not understanding your answer now. Did he testify that some amounts were being withheld from his paycheck?
He did.
Okay. All right. That is in the record. All right. Very good. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. You still have 2 minutes and 41 seconds. If you want to waive your time, that's fine.
Sure. I'll just very briefly touch on the best interest factors. I know we really didn't get into those, but obviously there in appellant's brief does touch on that point as well, because even if these statutory requirements are met, there does still need to be a finding that it's in the children's best interests. I think there was substantial evidence indicating that this termination of parental rights is in the children's best interest. I think that the testimony of the guardian ad litem at trial evidenced that. The guardian ad litem's report also came into the record and is a part of this. And that
was there a guardian ad litem in this matter?
There was, and he testified at trial, and his report was entered into the record.
And the guardian ad litem identified the fact that the children have no longer have an interest in him. Is that right?
Correct. I guess his conclusion was that the children do not recognize appellant as their father, and they have little to no memories of him, and that respondent AS is the person that they see as their father and has been for the past 7 years. So I would just like to reiterate that I do believe that the best interest findings were supported by sufficient evidence. In this case, there is no parent-child relationship to uphold. So the children don't have any interest in upholding this relationship when there really isn't one and they aren't benefiting from that. And that they have significant competing interests, which was a part of the guardian ad litem's testimony, that the children really would like to see their physical reality be matched by their legal reality, that this is their forever home. And that if something were to happen to mom, they would not be in a position where they would be forced to leave. And that is a significant factor when the court considered these best interest findings. So I would ask that be upheld as well.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Novotny, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And you'll have to unmute yourself too, sir. Thank you.
I'd like to jump to at least reference in the record, there was questions and discussion about contact between the appellant and then respondent, as well as with appellant's mother. And I think the response was that contact became limited over time or lessened in the more recent years. The appellant's mother did testify, and I mean, a summary of her testimony would be that there were more in the more recent times that the respondent in fact blocked grandmother's number. And that at least there was a reference.
You mean mother did, not respondent?
Yeah, respondent mother.
Yeah.
Yep. So the mother blocked grandmother's calls, and there's grandmother's testimony, there's information that in the most recent in 2019 that that respondent mother talked about that there was this case pending and her lawyer told her not to have contact with grandmother. So I think really that puts us where we are, taking us back to
did the grandmother testify that appellant wanted grandmother to be an intermediary or somehow make some contact with the children on his behalf?
At that time, a time and place is, I'm taking us right to about when this was filed and this is all occurring, the kind of lack of contact. At that point, I believe the answer, there's none of that in the record, that the appellant did not have his mother contact the children's mother.
So the point I'm making is whatever respondent mother might have done in terms of making it difficult for grandmother, there's no indication that the appellant asked grandmother somehow to intervene and help him have contact with the children. So it wouldn't have mattered what contact grandmother was deprived of by the respondent. Would that be a fair statement?
I believe so. Part of the point there is that at the time this case is coming to a head and being filed, that we are in a situation where contact is being cut off. So any efforts that are being made either by grandmother for what it's worth or my client are being shut down to a degree.
Well, but there's no evidence that your client made any other efforts to make contact, is there?
Only his testimony. He said that he tried to make contact and was ignored or no response.
And he made that contact with whom?
Mother of the children.
Okay.
Yep. So going back to summarize, I mean, we're in a situation, we come into this TPR, the respondent's position is that essentially, you know, the appellant has completely abandoned the children. But at a point where this case gets filed, you could say that prior to that, we have a situation of no contact, but then we get to this case, we have some minimal attempt at contact, then gets thwarted. We have this case that comes out to as long as it is, and we sit where we are. Could there have been more action taken? I think the answer on part of every parent that is alleged to be in a case of TPR, there's probably more every appellant could do, or every parent that is facing TPR. But the point is, what is required is that there must be a finding that they are not in a position to do it, that they either haven't rectified the things that brought us to where we are in the TPR case. And I do think that's the part that's missed. Despite it taking many years, appellant made those efforts, and we now are at a point where it could have been, or that those efforts towards rebuilding and reunifying were to be had, but then we get an immediate filing of a TPR. And so there's no evidence that would support.
You said an immediate filing of TPR?
So it essentially, as soon as information is out that the appellant is going through sobriety, going through the treatment program, then we get the TPR filing. The timing is not accidental.
Okay, well, thank you. We will take the matter under advisement, and obviously we've got a shorter time period to respond to the arguments today, and we will get it out within the statutory period of time. Thank you.
Thank you.